agenda is finance and budget. Regent Brody?
Thank you, Chair Milken. Finance and budget items 1 through 5 were approved in committee and will be considered as a consent agenda item. Susan, do you have anything more to add to any of those items, or Bruce?
I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions, comments? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the consent items 1 through 5.
So moved.
Motion by Regent Dennison?
Second.
Second by Regent Webb?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Item 6. Susan, take it away.
Okay, so if you all can pull up that slide deck for me. So if it's okay with you, Chair Brody, I'd like to keep this as informal as we can. It's not a lengthy presentation, but there's a lot of numbers to it. So please feel free to stop with any questions during the presentation, because this is an important item you'll be approving. So the items that I want to go through is basically just a brief introduction to the budget, going over some items that were included in the president's letter that starts the budget. Then I think it's important for the board to understand fully all the items that go into approving a budget. It's not just simply approving a budget. There's a lot of items embedded in that budget. Then covering some revenue highlights, expenditure highlights, and then next steps. So there were four themes within the president's message. First is student success highlights. As I like to say, that we couldn't have a successful budget if our students weren't successful. And then going through the budget governance on campus. The thing I'm most proud of our campus is that this is the first structurally balanced budget our campus will have in over 20 years. So, and that's thanks to everybody in the room. And then a lot of capital investments going on around campus. So these are just two items, and the president can speak to them, or provost can speak to them. These are two really, really proud moments for the campus as ours broken our 6-year graduation rate and our first year retention rate. So in 2018, when President Cabone came to campus and developed the strategic plan, the goal was set to reach 60% for our 6-year graduation rate by 2028. You'll see that as of 2024, we're at 57.9, which is the highest 6-year graduation rate for our campus. And then the 1-year retention rate is just phenomenal. So it currently stands at 78.3, which is almost unheard of for an institution like us. So I think we're now hovering around 80, correct, Provost?
81, 82.
So I think that's just phenomenal for our campus. So anything else, Bud, that you'd like to add me to?
No, I think I would just say thank you to everybody who's played a huge role, and that's everybody on campus related to both graduation and retention. Success is measured there and after that, beginning of career.
It's playing games with me. Okay, so to help guide us through our budget development, we have a budget executive committee on campus. And I wanted to show the board what the budget executive committee is comprised of, because I don't think anyone can say it's not a fully campus-wide committee. So we have 3 staff representatives, 3 faculty representatives, 1 department chair, 1 student representative, 2 vice presidents, and all of the college deans. So this is what the activities, what the Budget Executive Committee is responsible for. So they meet, they start meeting September when everybody gets back to campus. And they meet religiously, bi-weekly, throughout the entire fall and spring semester. And the meeting time this year was Tuesday at 3:30, which is sometimes a hard time to pull everyone together, but they did a really good job. They are responsible for reviewing all of the budget requests that come in throughout the campus and making recommendations up through executive leadership on funding priorities. They also, one of their big responsibilities is making a recommendation up to leadership on a salary recommendation. So I also wanted to show the actual members themselves. So the chairs this year were Dean Corinne Murphy and Bryson Davis, who is the Director of Student Financial Assistance, and they did a phenomenal job. So thank you, Dean Murphy, for the work. And then you will see the full membership there, and then those are the voting members, and then the non-voting members are listed as well. And this is what our actual, in kind of a flowchart way, shows of the structure of our budget governance. So you'll see that the BEC sits in the middle and receives input from the Staff Senate, the Faculty Senate, SGA, and Academic and Support Leadership. All that feedback goes into the BEC, and then they make recommendations up to executive leadership. So I think this is a really important part of this budget, so I want to take some time to go through it. So if you'll remember right, I think I sat here last year at this time and talked through the board about a two-year budget realignment plan. And so you approved that last year. This is the second year of that, but I wanted to remind everyone what year one looked like. So if you remember right, we had a $24 million basically structural imbalance in the budget. And that was actually an improvement from when Dr. Caboni came to campus. When he came to campus, it was probably closer to 40. So it took us a while to basically deal with it. As I told the board when we came to campus, when I came to campus and I realized we had a problem, it was probably about 6 months after that we went into the pandemic. And at that point, really all work basically was just around keeping the campus open, making sure our students and our faculty and staff were safe. So this got put on pause. And then we started working on the grant model once we got out of the pandemic. And then that took most of our efforts. So last year seemed like the perfect time to start working towards resolving this problem. So the items that we tackled in year one, as a reminder, one was a 7.5% permanent unit level budget realignment, and that totaled $13.5 million. Now, I know there's been some questions around that, so I want to answer that, and you can ask me any question you'd like, but this was a permanent budget reduction that was done last August, and all the units made the reduction, and it's permanent. It's not like there's another 7.5. It's a permanent budget reduction that's already been resolved, and so no more. We also we did the Voluntary Separation Incentive Program, or VSIP for short, that generated $3.7 million. And to remind everyone, there were 57 employees that accepted. The staff departed campus in basically after Thanksgiving last year, and the faculty left at the end of December. And then their payout happened in January. So the savings of $3.7 million, while we implemented the plan in 25, the savings will accrue in 26. And the final was a permanent reduction to the transportation budget of $300,000. So these were all the items that happened in year one of the two-year alignment plan. Any questions on that? Okay. So year two, so this is year two in the budget that you're approving today. So first will be a $4 million vacant position credit, and let me explain that. So this is a practice that happens across many governmental entities, including higher education. It's a strategy that's successful without going about reducing permanently unit budgets. So what we will do, at any point in time, the university has somewhere between $8 and $12 million in vacancies across the entire university. So what we will do is every month, The budget office, Renato and Brian, will work with the unit budget managers to make sure that those positions are actually vacant and there's no reasons why we can't make the necessary transfer. And we will transfer 50% of 1/12 of the lapped salary at that point. So the units will be keeping 50%, and 50% will go into the central, for the lack of a better term, bucket. So once that bucket is filled at $4 million, we will stop the process until the next year. And as a reminder, the positions stay in the unit's budget. It's not that we pull the budget, pull the position centrally.
So yeah, just to clarify on that, because the questions that people have asked me, you're not, central is not gathering these positions back together. This is just taking 50% of the money. Meanwhile, the colleges or other areas have 50% of the money to be able to hire temporary people, adjuncts, whatever.
Yeah. And there's always going to be an exception. So that's why we make sure that the budget office will be working closely. We actually had a meeting with the budget managers on Wednesday. Dr. Murphy attended, which I thought was helpful to have a dean's perspective there. And they give a lot of good feedback. And so it's not just that we're just going to go pull things without checking.
But we are starting this process of figuring this out, to do this each year until you get to $4 million. That's
yes.
What I heard just for a second.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The second strategy is we did receive some good news from the pension office at the state that our fixed pension obligation for the next 2 years will go down by $1.5 million. It's good in the sense that we can use $1 million of that towards our second year realignment strategy. People have asked me, is there some risk that the obligation will go back up? I guess there is some risk. I don't think a lot, because we are hiring fewer KERS employees. So I don't expect the obligation to go back up. If it did, we will just revisit it in a couple of years. And the physical plant critical needs, Ryan Russell and his staff, they have a reserve right now of about $1.5 million that they use to do critical needs maintenance across campus. Leadership's thinking was that we could reduce that back by about half, since the asset preservation money that we're receiving from the state can be used to backfill that. So Brian and I've had a discussion and think we are good to go on that. And the last strategy for this year is the, if you remember right, I presented a strategy last year that was met with some resistance. I think that's a fair point across campus, that we were going to charge all revenue generating units a 10% overhead charge. So we paused, we took the pushback and listened to it and paused the strategy. And this year what we're doing is we are applying a 13% overhead charge only to non-college revenue generating units. So again, we met with the budget managers, we're talking with them about how we're going to do that, and it sounds as if it's going to go over much better than the last strategy from last year. So with that, this being the second year of the strategy, this will put us back into structural balance. Any questions on that? Okay. And then capital investments on campus, I think you all can actually see all of these that are going on. Our College of Business, which is the majority is completed. It'll be open for instruction in the fall semester. Our Hilltopper Fieldhouse is under construction and is scheduled to open in October. And then the Cherry Hall renovation renderings and more renderings will be unveiled in the coming months. So to what I talked about earlier, I think it's important for the board in particular to understand everything that they'll be approving as approving the budget. So first, you're approving tuition rates. And these tuition rates are in accordance with the CPE tuition parameters. CPE, the state of Kentucky, has the statutory authority for approving tuition. but they set parameters for each college campus to fall within, and our tuition rates will do that. Good news for our faculty and staff. The BEC formally recommended a 2% compensation pool to be distributed in January of 26 to all eligible faculty and staff on campus. I do want to put one caveat. Now that we are in structural balance, we will reconvene the deans and vice presidents by myself in probably the end of September to make sure that we have hit all of our revenue targets. And if that's the case, then the president would typically ask the BEC to reconvene and make a decision or make a recommendation on how that salary will be distributed. College fees. So these, and I will probably ask our provost to talk a little bit about this. He's much more familiar with it than I am. But I believe Bud says that when he came to campus, we had about 700 or so college fees.
I'll be happy.
Yeah.
When I came to campus, one of the first things that somebody asked me about were the course fees. And I walked back to my office and asked Jessica Gillen how many there were, and she told me there were 779 course fees. And I went, you're kidding, right? And, you know, where I come from, the average was like 50 or 60, and all of a sudden we had 779. And at that point, they were being asked, there was a committee. There is a fee committee on this campus that's made up of a group from a broad group from across campus. They were in the middle of being asked by the previous provost to see if we could lower the number of course fees. So I allowed them to continue on. I wanted to see what would come back, and they came back with 590 course fees. And at that point, we and the deans decided we should probably talk about a different way to fee students that would do a few sets of things as we move forward. One was is to make sure that if we took away the course fees, the people who were getting the course fees would still get that money and be able to teach the classes they're teaching. Two was is to have some extra money for two different things. One was that if new courses were put in or old courses needed money to be able to do something different in their classrooms, there would be money available to, for them to request to get that. And three was to have some extra money to go towards student success in each college. And that's what we came up with, and that's what we've done by moving to these course fees. Now, that was already occurring as called, what was called the program fee in Gordon Ford, and it had been in for a significant number of times. So we have got rid of all course fees, and I'm going to say except for, I think, three in CHHS that are gigantic course fees that have to stay for, like, nursing. There's no way to get around it. They have to be there still. But in all cases, we have got rid of the 590-some course fees as we see them. We have gone to the college fees and now have an opportunity, I think, to do some stuff that's really important. I'll use Ogden as an example. I think when you look at Ogden, they have a large number of course fees. They will still get their course fees to run their classes. There are some classes that need new fees, and they will get some of those new fees. And then it's equipment heavy, and it's been very difficult to find the dollars to put new equipment in labs where students are being taught, and this will give us an opportunity to do some of that over there. So we've gone to this, and it went through the fee committee. We got responses. They told us they were on board at the end, and it followed the path that every fee on this campus has followed. So that's where we are.
So while we have that up and, and you hear just a couple of questions on this particular page. As the board's aware, I resented a few resolutions in their last minute meeting, and one of them was on academic quality and the concerns of the faculty, as they expressed in that meeting, was that with the amount of over the implementation of RAMP, the allocation of resources, a lot of faculty support has gone away. We have removed student workers, we've removed the administrative support for faculty, and look for efficiencies in a lot of areas. Since this is approximately $3 million going into the colleges and additional fees from what we had before, if you look at the way it's laid out in the budget,
sure.
We'd just be looking to see, is there ways that we can look to make sure some of this money is to help faculty help student success? Student success, faculty play a major role in this, and some of them feel like they've been left a little bit out as we put this emphasis on student success. And just to bring up one point on this, know, we just approved these action items, I'm sorry, these consent items in the academic affairs agenda. Mm-hmm. And what we see here, the budgetary implications and all these programs we do, we always say there's no budgetary implication. We will cover this with existing faculty. We keep approving these programs. We keep saying existing faculty will do it, adding to the workload, but yet taking this for. So just asking from the faculty's perspective.
So I'm going to say two things related to that. One I'm going to say is if you're putting in new programs and you need people, you need to tell me that. I am not a mind reader at this point, and you know I've told Faculty Senate multitudes of times to go back to their faculty, and if they really need people to do it. Example would be neurobiology needed people, and we are in the middle of taking care of neurobiology. You need to tell us so that I get a chance to do what I'm supposed to do, which is figure out how to find money to do those kinds of things. And I will continue to do that. I think two is when you look at these fees, the fees and what they can be used for have been defined by the colleges. And they are broad enough to be able to do what you're talking about. But they can't be done in a vacuum. I've talked to all the deans that we would like to see a committee in each college who sits there, looks at what are the requests, and then votes as a group and moves it forward so that there's checks and balances being taken care of in each college about how this money is spent and how does it really relate to student success.
So with the board review, we get a report from you maybe next August.
Yes, they have to send us a report, what they spent the money on, all of that at the end. That's the other thing it helps us a little bit with. In the old system, we would get 799 reports that we have to go through every year. Now we'll get 5 where we can pick up a closer look at it and see how it's really being used and to be able to distribute it to show how it's used.
Okay. Thank you. So, but to another point.
Sure.
I appreciate the 2% addition to the compensation pool. Mm-hmm. As you know, we did a compensation study a few years ago.
We did, in 2023.
Still continue to come up short on getting our faculty and staff to even 80% of the median of, which has been a goal that you've stated in the past, median of our benchmarks, getting to 80% of that. You know, the board is looking today at hitting the median of our benchmarks as a fair standard to use in compensation. And I agree with that. I mean, I think we are striving to be something in looking at aspirant schools, but we're also, you know, not at the same level as some others. I think that is a great standard, that we should be hitting the median for faculty and staff compensation. 2%, I appreciate the president's commitment to this. I mean, it is a major change from what we had before, but there's 4 or 5 goals in the strategic plan that talk about compensation and faculty workload. And I feel like we, as an institution, have to set a strategic direction. Well, we did set a strategic direction. We need to see a little more attention paid to that as we continue to focus on student success. And that's not just aimed at you, it's just...
No, that's fine. I can only talk to faculty because I do faculty one. I will say at that point that we are over 80%. So I'm going to tell you at this point, the last compensation model was put in 22-23. As we went to that compensation model, there were really 3 things we were trying to take care of as we looked out into the future. We wanted to get everybody over 80% of the median, or a COMPA ratio, as they call it. That's what it is. And then what we also wanted to do was to first get everybody over 80% to get take care of inversions. So if you've been here 15 years and somebody's been hired in year 4 and they're making more money than you, we have to move you up. So that's what we had to do. And third is to have some dollars to be able to, if you're really close and really bad compression, we could move you a little. So those were the 3 things we tried to do. And we have gone back and ran the data using what would be 22-23 data. And right now, all assistant professionals that are being hired here are being hired at a COMPA ratio of 100% or more. That's the average. All associates are at 93-95, and all professors are 90-93. So we are over the 80%. I ran yesterday to see how many were not over the 80%. We have 4 individuals, 3 that I can deter. I know why, and it makes sense. 1, I don't know how it slipped through the cracks. And I already gave it back to my comp person to take a look at so that we could adjust that person, because we missed that. I am more than happy to say that at that point. But We have done, I think, a yeoman's job at this point, moving compensation in a time period where higher education has seen basically a decline in compensation at an astronomical rate compared to all other kinds of institutions, all other kinds of industry. And I think with this 2%, it will be the fourth year in a row for this, and that will only help us get there. Now, I think as we move forward, I also looked at all the Kentucky schools and compared us to all the Kentucky schools, and looking at what professors make, associate and assistant professors and instructors, and I did NKU, EKU, Murray State, Moorhead, I think was it, and what you see is that we're number two. We're behind NKU, which I would have expected, because they're a different Carnegie and they're a different kind of institution. So that's where we are. I think we've made strides, huge strides, in a short period of time. Do I think it's enough? I mean, I've said it in faculty senate, I don't. I mean, I think we have to stump, but I think when you look at a 2% compensation pool that's gone, continued to go while we got to a zero-based budget is pretty amazing to me. I think that at this point I'm comfortable where we are, but now it's time to think about the future. And I agree.
And Shane, I've got somewhat like statistics for the staff, because Bud deals with the faculty and I deal with the staff. So again, as Bud said, this is back a couple of years when we did our last study. But of the data set, which is a little over 1,000 staff, full-time staff, 40% of our staff are over 100%. 53% of our staff are at 80 to 100%. And then there's about 6% of our staff that are below the 80%. And those are primarily, which I would have to dig into a little bit, but those are primarily within grant-funded positions or within athletics. Now, I know athletics is, I know Todd's around here someplace.
Right. Okay.
Changing it up all the time. And so I would say those are probably, they're of course not our coaches, but maybe your assistant coaches or your managers or positions like that. But I'm like Bud, you know, statistics are what they are. Do I think we can do more? We'll do with what we can. I would love to be able to put a huge pot of money out there for our faculty and staff. It's just that we're just limited within our confines of our budget. So
just to clarify, when you're saying that we're at 100% or 80%, you're talking about
median.
Median, yes. Just for clarification. I just think it's important for the board to recognize, as perhaps a strategic priority, that the compensation of the people who have worked on this, and not saying that we're not making progress, because I do believe we are making progress, but it's certainly something that we have to continue to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think so too. And I do want to point out on the staff side, because I think that it doesn't go unnoticed on my part, but I think something people have to keep in mind is we get a lot of paid time off on this campus, thanks to the president. Thanks to others, but if you were to look at all the time off we get in the summer days or fall break, spring break, I mean, if you, and all the vacation we get, if you put that all together, you're looking at only really working 9 to 10 months a year. So if you take the salary and extrapolate it out, it's much different than just looking. So I just bring that to your attention, because sometimes it goes a bit unnoticed. And that, and I certainly think it's a huge benefit for folks. And so anyway, I just wanted to say that.
I think we have a, you know, fairly, we do very well on total compensation. The president's been committed to putting money into a healthcare plan. And when we compare to other institutions, we're doing well. But we have far too many people on this campus who make $40,000 a year and below. And in this community, that is a struggle to live. So.
And so we put out a total compensation letter to each faculty and staff about 2 years ago. We're going to issue that again in September once all the faculty is back. So that's actually going to lay out all your total compensation and then how it compares to 2 years ago. So.
But yes. These college fees.
Yes, ma'am.
Every institution does.
Yeah, well, and it's much easier to deal with.
It's kind of like a hidden thing, I think.
Yeah.
You don't really see it.
Well,
you're shopping.
I had that conversation with Rush this morning. We were talking about, was it a positive? What are the positives? And then I told him, we've rolled it out. Bills have been sent. Things have been, and nobody's come back to ask me any questions or any of those kinds of things. And they just, people went, oh. You know, and as I, my favorite are the students, and I asked some students about it, and they said, are they on there? So I don't even know if they look at a bill, or if they are, they're not even noticing it. So, I mean, what it does, though, is give us an opportunity to make everything better. We talk about quality all the time, and, you know, I listen to Sam, and we talk about quality when we're together, and this is an opportunity to change things up. It's an opportunity to get new things and new ideas and test new ideas, and I think that's very important as we move forward as an institution.
One of the things I was going to say on the college fees, which I agree with college fees, I think it gives more opportunity. Like you said, Provost Fisher for quality. But one of the things I said last year at the Board of Regents retreat, I guess in early August, was that like, I feel that there's sort of been a decrease, and I think a lot of it has been somewhat taken care of, but I feel like there's been a little bit of a decrease in the resources available to students in some units on campus. So, like I know in Gordon Ford College of Business, some of like the tutoring programs have sort of taken a little bit of a decrease. I know in some other places on campus, some of the student workers have taken a little bit of a decrease. So, do you think that with implementation of these fees that, I think it's great that we're going to be forced to, you know, doing new ideas, new innovations that can continue to push our campus forward. But do you think, you know, any of that fee will kind of go back to make sure some of the things out of, you know, in names of, I mean, it's some things we have to get rid of to even out the budget, but do you think any of those things can kind of be reviewed to sort of make sure that the student needs and these academic units are still being supplemented?
So I guess I would say yes, because I've had conversations, I think, with every dean in this room about what you would use those fees for and where you would go, and I'll go back to, in case of Evelyn, we had in the conversation yesterday that right now, because of growth occurring in Gordon Ford, and I only expect there to be more growth once this opens and people get a chance to see this, their advisors are now advising 400. And the really what you should be advising is 300. And we talked about you may be using this fee to get another advisor in so that we can get students in and get them in a timely fashion. Dave and I have talked about using it for student workers and all kinds of things. So it's exactly what we've talked about, right? It's a way that we saw to take and be able to create opportunities for students and to make sure that within classrooms they had what they needed to get a quality education.
Mind if I speak on that?
Oh, please.
In the college level, there's a lot of direct impact, especially within our college. Some of our units haven't been afforded fees before. So a lot of those efforts like mock trial or the prison class and all those things have been funded through just finding money from year to year, or just we were just seeing what would happen. But now with the college fees, they have a sustainable way to be able to do those things. So we're able to provide the legal services clinic that we just saw. We're able to provide mock trial. We're able to provide more tutoring now, and putting the tutoring center in there. Also, Image West, which is our was a for-profit that now is a non-profit because of college fees, so it's able to be sustained that way. So our number one question is always, how do you go back? So those new initiatives are able to support things that weren't consistent before, making them consistent, and also finding some new things. So yeah, they have made a tremendous impact on Gordon Ford.
Just one last comment, and this goes in a different direction, but the tension that we have in the RAMP model between the revenue-generating units and the central units, and that participation fee, since this is going directly to the colleges, we've seen some pushback in some central areas that they're understaffed. I'm assuming as we look at the RAMP model over the next year or so, we're doing that study, we can look at if that participation fee is enough, and if, since the colleges are now being funded in other ways.
Yes, so our plans are to take a hard look at the model this coming summer with the deans and vice presidents, probably and looking at all those things, participation fee, the indirect cost pools, how the tuition, how the state appropriation is allocated, because all those decisions were made probably back in 2018. So is it time to look at things differently and compare ourselves to how other institutions are doing? And finally, the final thing you'll be approving within this budget, I like to refer to as a couple of differential tuition rates. So one is the doctorate in psychology, a resident rate of $690 per hour. And what the provost and deans have told me is that's kind of mid-pack when you compare ourselves to other peer institutions that offer that program. The RN to BSN at $394 per hour. That was a program that we eliminated several years ago, and now bring it back because of the demand, high demand for that program. And that's actually, I think you said, is relatively low compared to other programs.
It is.
Okay. So on to revenue highlights. So you'll see that we are a highly enrollment-dependent institution, tuition fees making up 46% of our revenue budget. The next highest would be state appropriation at 22%. So if you were in higher education probably 15, 20 years ago here in the state of Kentucky, you would have seen that would have been flip-flop. The state appropriation would have been the largest pie, and then followed by tuition and fees. But as the state has disinvested, and it started to make some reinvestments back into higher education, but we're going to push for that in the upcoming budget session. So just a little on tuition and fees and how we go about making up the tuition revenue budget. So total headcount on campus, so that's everybody on campus as far as students taking courses, is 16,376. That's not what you budget on. If you budget on headcount, that's going to get you into trouble really quick. So we budget at full-time equivalents, or our full-time equivalents, 13,445. So our first-time, first-year class, we're projecting relatively flat. John Mark always reminds me, it's not actually flat, Susan. We brought in a class of 2788 in last fall, so relatively flat, but not about 12 additional students. But and that's great for budgeting. We want to be conservative, but President Caboni has let us all know it's fine to budget conservative, but that's not our goal. So we're hoping to bring in a freshman class higher than that. And then again, on the tuition and fee rates, we'll use the new tuition rates that are approved for the fall of 25, the addition of the college fees that we've talked about in length. And the great news for this budget is all of that together, we're seeing an increase in net tuition revenue of $5.3 million. And all of that is hard work on the enrollment and the financial aid team, with a result of improvement in our scholarship model. So our state appropriation, this, as a reminder, this is the second year of our biennial budget, so we do it this time. Last year, what our state appropriation would be, pending no mid-year budget reduction from the state. So our base appropriation is flat from 25. The good news is we were anticipating a significant decline in performance funding, and we were notified that it was really only a marginal decrease of around $200,000. Gatton Academy on campus will receive an increase of about $300,000 in their base funding. Grants and contracts. So I know there's a lot of conversation going on at the federal level around the bills around the budget, and which may impact our bill Pell. But we just don't know that as of today. And when we built our budget, we were notified that we were seeing significant increases in the Pell and the CAP grants. And from a budget perspective, you see this on the revenue side, and you'll see a like increase on the expense side. So should something change at the federal level, we will make the necessary adjustments. And another item to note, extramurally funded research is budgeted flat this year because of all the things going on at the government level. other revenue, I think the largest increase to note there is transfers in from the foundation, and that's directly associated with the fundraising that's going on for the portion of the college business that we had to bond out, and the field house. So that's about an additional $2.9 million. Auxiliary and sales and service. So one would imagine most of your auxiliaries are directly associated with your enrollment, your housing and dining, and if you're budgeting your enrollment flat, your auxiliary revenue would also come in at a budget of flat. So, and then sales and services is primarily athletic driven revenue, and that's declining by about $1 million, and that's directly associated with one fewer football game guarantee. So this year we had Alabama and Boston College. Next year we'll just have the one, which is LSU. And on the expenditure side, so as we on the revenue side are enrollment dependent, on the expenditure side we are labor intensive, and that's, we're no different than any other college campus in the industry. So about 50% of our budget is made up of salaries and benefits, and so you'll see that the other, we've got a $123 million in student financial aid. And then on down the categories there, I'd have to take another chance to point out that our budget realignment strategy is now down to zero. So great news for our campus. Oops. So personnel, again, included in the personnel budget is the 2% compensation pool. Again, as recommended by the BEC and accepted by executive leadership, and just that one caveat about making sure that we meet our fall overall revenue goals. And most of the other changes in the personnel categories are directly related to those two-year budget realignment strategies. Financial aid, I won't go into, we talked about the issues going around with Pell and CAP. You'll see the $5.3 million reduction in our institutional aid, which improved our net tuition revenue. And our operating expenses, I think everybody on campus knows that we have worked hard to reduce basically all of our discretionary expense items. The only two items that you see an increase in there would be debt service, which is basically associated with the debt service on the Gordon Ford College of Business and the field house, and then a modest increase in our utility budget. So next steps. So we are asking the board to approve the budget today. If you do approve it, the next step would be that the tuition rate, the full budget, does not go to the CPE, just the tuition rate. I don't expect any problems with that. It's within the CPE guidelines. And then the final step would be for all of the data that resides in our budget software to move into the university's general ledger. And so before I take any questions, I just would be remiss if I didn't take the opportunity to thank all the people over here. That I would not be successful if it wasn't for Ronaldo and Brian within the budget office, and then all the work that we do with the deans and vice presidents, and with Bud and I work very closely together, and the president. So just a huge thank you to those people.
I would echo your sentiments, Dave. Thanks to everyone. Questions or comments for Susan?
What was the reasoning behind raising the tuition for in-state residents and non-out-state residents?
So that's a great question, Sam. And basically, that most of our out-of-state students come with the Border State Scholarship. And the Border State Scholarship reduces the out-of-state to the resident rate. So if we were to increase the non-resident rate, it would just be offset by a like increase in scholarship. Does that make sense? I mean, it may not make perfect sense, but that's the reason we do it.
Okay.
And then there's I've heard some questions around international students, and it's the same concept. We have a tip type arrangement with our international students that it would just increase the scholarship budget. And then also, as I know Bud knows, that we're just not recruiting a lot of international students right now.
Any other questions or comments? President Cabana, have anything?
Well, after 8 years of hard work and a lot of belt tightening by our faculty, our staff, a lot of administrative work by leadership across campus, the most important thing that comes out of this is that we have not just a structurally balanced budget, but that we are no longer using carry forward, which is a terrible budget process. This is the first time in 20 years that this university has had that kind of budget. And it may not be sexy, it may not get headlines in the newspaper, but what I'm going to tell you, it is some of the most important work that's happened at this university in the past generation. And so for everyone who has done that work, I'm going to say thank you. And it's not just administrators, it's faculty, it's staff, it's department heads, it's every person that makes a decision not to spend money when they could make the decision to spend money. And I appreciate the institution's commitment to being fiscally sound and fiscally conservative and being disciplined. And we're going to continue that work. Thank you.
Everybody, again, needs to be commended on that. Further questions, comments?
So basically, like, I'm trying to figure out this, like, in-state versus out-of-state thing. I'm sorry for not catching this really until recently. But so if we were to raise the out-of-state and international tuition costs, there would be just no way to do that because of the scholarship we have set up?
Well, we would have to change our scholarship model.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way that the scholarship model is structured for any student who comes in with a 3.0 GPA, they qualify for some merit award. The tuition structures are set so that if a student receives a merit award, they can receive a discount down to the in-state tuition rate for regardless of residency. But in those border states, they automatically get in-state tuition. So if you raise those tuition, those bordering state rates or the tuition incentive program rates, it really doesn't increase revenue at all. It just increases the expense side since they're already going to be going to the in-state rate.
Is the border state rate, is that through Kentucky law that we have to abide by that?
The border state rate is an institutional scholarship that we received clearance from the Council on Post-Secondary Education.
And I will say that one other thing on the tuition, Sam, is that the CPE, they focus primarily on resident tuition. They give clear guidance. They set no parameters on non-resident or international graduate or doctoral. They allow the institution's full flexibility on setting.
Any other comments? If not, I would entertain a motion to approve the fiscal 2025-26 operating budget.
So moved.
Motion by Regent West.
Second.
Second by Regent Dennison. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed.
Want to oppose?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So noted. Mr. Chair, that concludes finance budget audit.
Very good. The next item is the exhibit.